You're listening to Real Talk, sponsored by Marcus Werenberg Theaters. I'm Colin Ritter.
And I'm Peter Lewis.
And in today's episode, we're back to...
The Wonderful World of Disney.
That's right. Today is part two of our five-part series on the Walt Disney Animation Studios. We're going to be talking about the Bronze Age today, so from 1967 to 1988. But before we get going, we just want to encourage each and every one of you listeners to check us out on iTunes, the Google Play Store, KRCU.org, as well as KRCU's Facebook page, because that's how you stay connected to what we're doing, right?
Yep, and we're going to be busy this summer, so
exactly,
basically the beginning.
We have a lot of good summer series coming your way, this one included, but just a lot of fun stuff, a lot of fun stuff you're not going to want to miss. So, the Bronze Age, this is a very interesting era in not only the Walt Disney Animation Studios, but the Walt Disney Company as a whole, because we're starting in 1967. So, Walt Disney has just died. Walt died in December of 1966.
Allegedly.
Oh gosh, don't even. So, we're going into a very interesting era as far as changes are concerned. We have a company that is worried. I mean, is rightfully worried. Their leader is no longer there. So they're having to make some dire decisions. At this point, you have Walt's brother Roy taking over to kind of, you know, captain the company for a few years until his unfortunate death shortly after the opening of Walt Disney World. So this is kind of a short little patch of films, only nine Walt Disney Animation Studios films. Well, technically eight, because one of the films that came out in this era was actually Amblin Entertainment. That worked with Disney. It was distributed by Buena Vista. So it's a very interesting time.
It's kind of the black sheep of basically the Disney eras.
Because, yeah,
as we'll get into, they start expanding, you know, past film in,
yeah,
a lot of ways. It becomes a film studio that's really starting to get, you know, into more of the TV and other media.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, we'll get to, you know, the big elephant in the room about their newest theme park.
Exactly, yeah. We have the Disney Channel launching in 1983, and then by 1984, Disney Television Animation is launching on top of theme park development, which was at this time becoming a very large part of what the Walt Disney Company stood for. I mean, prior to Walt's death, you have, you know, this anticipation for what was described as the Florida Project, you know, with this development of what would become the Magic Kingdom as well as Epcot. So you have a lot going on at this time. And as mentioned, you have Walt's passing, his unfortunate passing due to cancer. So now you have, I mean, all of these people are in the dark. You have animators in the dark, you have executives in the dark, and they have to kind of figure out what to do. So a short list of films, but some pretty good ones, if you ask
me. I'd say
me.
From a film studio standpoint, I think this is the last time in history we've seen, you know, the big dog in the studio. Like,
oh, yeah.
Because everything was Walt, was centered around Walt in some way.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, we got Bob Iger at Disney.
Yeah.
You know, if he left tomorrow, you know, they would have to, you know, rush to find somebody. But again, creativity speaking, it wouldn't be so focused on him. I think that's what, you know, basically why it took them so long, because they built their brand around this one man.
Exactly.
And again, like you said in the last episode, now he's gone.
Exactly. You actually make a really good point. Like you said, Bob Iger, that's who we have, you know, captaining the company right now, the CEO and chairman. But when Walt was gone, that was much different, because he built this company. You know, he built this company from the ground up in a garage, you know, in 1923, and we're up to this point. He's become an entertainment mogul. He's developed one of the largest entertainment companies the world had ever known. All of a sudden, he's gone. How does the company respond? How do they react? And from an animation standpoint, they react with a few of these films that we're going to talk
about. I mean, just think about how many people probably just Googled Bob Iger now just to get a sense of who he is. You know, maybe it's
exactly
the first time you ever heard of him, because, you know, again, these studio heads, you know, they're kind of more behind the scenes.
Exactly.
In some ways. But again, Walt, everybody knew who Walt was on, you know, fame levels with Howard Hughes at the time.
Exactly. He had his own TV show. He had the Disneyland TV show. You know, you have the Wonderful World of Disney. You have a lot of things. Well, the great thing about Walt Disney is he was, you know, the man in charge. He was the top executive at this company. But at the same time, he was very much in the public eye. And I think a lot of times now, people growing up don't realize that Walt Disney is an actual person. They just associate Walt Disney with the company and not being a real person. So it's kind of interesting to see those different outlooks and different aspects. Kind of like you said, some people may have had to Google Bob Iger, and it makes you wonder the amount of people who don't know that Walt was an actual person.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I guess we can just kind of delve right into this. Briefly, in our last episode, we did hint at The Jungle Book because that's the last animated feature film that Walt Disney personally advised. But we won't dwell on that too long because we did talk about it in the last episode, because that was October 1967. So to formally get into our episode today, we can start with The Aristocats, which was December of 1970. Now, I have this down as my third favorite in this era.
Yeah, I kind of see. Again, we, you know, there's not a lot to go off on in this era to begin with. But yeah, I think that's a good choice for number three, because it's one of the, it's pretty remembered.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess consider a good classic from Disney. You know, again, not a lot of quote-unquote classic coming from this era in many people's minds.
The Aristocats is a movie I always loved as a kid. You have some great, I mean, from a story standpoint, you have some great heavy hitters coming out of this film. You have Ken Anderson, who, of course, is a Disney legend. You have Frank Thomas. But you have a really weird sort of transition period getting ready to happen. Focusing more on the Aristocats, I love the movie. I think it's a lot of fun. It's when you start to see, I think, what I would consider the fade out of traditional Disney animation. Because as we get into the Renaissance in the next episode, you're going to really start to see a transition into what the Walt Disney Company, or what Walt Disney Animation Studios would become in the 90s, and then transferring into the 2000s and to now. There's been a slight, I don't even want to say slight, there has been a definite change throughout these decades, and I think this is when you really start to see that change. But you have to understand, 1970, Disney is facing some potential, you know, financial problems, because, as mentioned, we have Roy Disney, Walt's brother, now manning the company, working to develop what will become, you know, Walt Disney World, the Florida Project, and thus lead to the opening of the Magic Kingdom on October 1st, 1971, which is why we see that break between 1970, and then we don't see the next film, which is Robin Hood, until November of 1973, which, Peter, you have down as your second favorite of this era.
Yes, one of the go on a point you made about, you know, even shortly after Walt's passing, you know, they're starting to change the way they view film.
Yeah.
And I guess that's something the Aristocats does, but I think Robin Hood does well, because, you know, just like an interesting way to tell a story that, from a film standpoint, has been told on
numerous times, over and over.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just trying to think. I think there's like five I could probably name.
Off the top of your head.
But again, just, you know, this interesting animated version, you know, with animals and all that type of stuff. You know, again, classic story, but told in a very different way. And I think that's what we're going to start seeing, you know, especially in the Renaissance era, you know, some of these films, you know, they've been told before in film and literature or media in some way, shape, or form, but now they're playing with it in a much different way. And I think that's where you can say this probably began.
Exactly. And Robin Hood's a good movie. I mean, that's a fun movie. You know, I know several people who would say that Robin Hood is actually their favorite animated Disney film. So, I mean, It's definitely stood the test of time. You know, it's still a good movie that I'll enjoy every now and then. You know what I mean? I wouldn't say it's my favorite of the Walt Disney Animation Studios collection, but it's definitely a good movie. One, if you haven't seen, take a look at it. I think it's a lot of fun.
And then, yeah, see, I haven't seen it in forever, basically. And I, you know, just thinking about right now, some of the scenes are coming back, you know, the characters. I think that's, you know, a good testament, even if you haven't seen it in a long time. You know, let's be real, until you show me the list of films we're going to talk about today, I was like, oh, yeah, Robin Hood.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
So I think that's what one of Disney's strengths is. You know, even if you haven't seen these films in, you know, maybe over 15 years, just the mention of it will be like, oh, yeah, Robin Hood.
Oh, that's right.
That's a good film.
Forget about that. Yeah, exactly. And then we have a big break next. We go from November 1973, and we don't see another film coming out of the Walt Disney Animation Studios until March of 1977. And that's The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, which both of us have as our favorite film of this era. This is a classic. I grew up watching this film over and over and over again. Not only did I have this, I had all the, you know, the shorts on VHS. I mean, I just loved Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, same. I remember growing up, I had every possible Winnie the Pooh VHS from Disney.
Exactly.
Oh, bit. If this show, I think, is the 91 show on Netflix now? Because if so, I'm going to start binge watching that.
I'm not sure if it is. I have to check that out.
But yeah, this is just, you know, Did they have the rights to Winnie the Pooh before that, or is that finally when they got it?
You know, that's a good question. I can look that up. But I'll say, I don't know off the top of my head.
I know for sure that's the first one they did with that property, and I got to say that's a pretty good start with Winnie the Pooh in that fashion. Again, you know, the way they've always made Winnie the Pooh films is, you know, it's shorts, but again, they're always interesting stories that are just fun to watch. And again, this is a, you know, property with some really fun characters. Again,
yeah.
Pooh, everybody knows who Winnie the Pooh is. Tigger's a classic. It's just a very well-done movie. And again, you have a long break, so, you know, obviously there was got to be something going on for them to really get effort into it.
So in 1961, it was the rights of Winnie the Pooh were licensed to Walt Disney Productions in exchange for royalties in the first two agreements. So starting in 1966, the Walt Disney Company kind of had the rights because that was the first real appearance of Winnie the Pooh. So, yeah, 1966. So that, again, that's the year Walt died. So this predates this era that they've had these rights.
Be interesting to see what Walt would have done with Winnie the Pooh because I think he, if there's anybody who understood, you know, really fun characters, it would have been Walt.
Oh, yeah.
And again, these are, again, all fun characters. And not to say, you know, obviously this is our agreement as the best in this era, even though there's, you know, even though there's not a lot to go around, I would honestly, if you put this maybe in the era we did before, I'd probably try to put it on the list somewhere.
Oh, I agree. And this movie, as with The Aristocrats, had an amazing team behind it. You have story development. You have Xavier Atencio. I mean, Xavier Atencio, he did the script for The Haunted Mansion. He worked on Pirates of the Caribbean in the parks. You also have, again, Ken Anderson. And then you have the music by Richard and Robert Sherman, the Sherman brothers, who were incredibly famous with the Walt Disney Company, doing a lot of music not only for the parks and resorts, but doing a lot of music for the films, such as There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow from the Carousel of Progress, from It's a Small World to Mary Poppins. So you have a very diverse group of talent working on this film, and I think it definitely shows. The movie's a lot of fun, and it's still one that I can watch today and still enjoy.
Absolutely.
So moving on, we can just kind of skim through the next few movies. So we have The Rescuers. That comes out in 1977, the same year. So this came out a few months later. So Winnie the Pooh is March. The Rescuers came out in June of 77. From there, we have The Fox and the Hound, which came out in 1981. So again, a big gap. We have a big gap between these two, which leads us to The Black Cauldron in 1985. Now you notice we go from 77 with The Rescuers to 81 with The Fox and the Hound, and then 85 with The Black Cauldron. So anyone who's pretty, you know, up on Disney history would know that in 1982, Epcot opened. So you can definitely see all of the different, I don't want to say holes, but all of the different projects that the Walt Disney Company is working on intermingled with their film release dates. Because again, 1983, Disney Channel launches. In 84, Disney Television Animation launches. So kind of as you alluded to earlier, we start to see that transition away from Walt Disney Feature Animation and the Walt Disney Animation Studios as just a movie-making house. We kind of move into this immersive guest environments, you know, this development there with the Magic Kingdom and Epcot. We see this need for television, you know, working towards syndication. You have all of these changes that are occurring, and it's reflected through the gaps in the film. So, as mentioned, 1985, we have The Black Cauldron, which you have listed as your number three in this era.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny, again, until I saw its name on the list, completely forgot it existed. But I always tell people fantasy, and I mean fantasy in terms of like, you know, dragons, spells, witchcraft, all that stuff. It's a hard sell for me.
Yeah.
For some reason, like, I just can't really get into it like I do with, you know, like Lord of the Rings. That's a hard thing. But this, I think it was just so stylistic from what I remember. And again, just, you know, a nice, simple story, fun characters. I remember the villain in that film was just so cool from an artistic standpoint, you know, just a story standpoint. So, yeah, again, you know, not a lot to go on in this decade. But again, I remember just remembering that. I was like, you know what? That's something I saw a lot, even though, again, it's been a long time.
I know. Yeah, The Black Cauldron is a great movie. I mean, I really enjoy it. And then from there, we move into 1986 when we have The Great Mouse Detective, another fun movie. Have you seen The Great Mouse Detective?
I cannot remember, honestly.
If you haven't, take the time to watch it because it's a lot of fun. It's a good adventure movie. And from there, we move into 1988 when we have a movie that's quote-unquote technically not completely produced by the Walt Disney Company or Walt Disney Animation Studios, but Amblin Entertainment, which is, of course, my boy Steven Spielberg's company, but it's distributed by Buena Vista, and that's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, beautiful mesh of live acting and animation, something that, you know, a lot of animation historians will say Walt kind of developed back in the day with the Alice comedies, even back when he was starting in Kansas City, which, of course, is something we'll talk about in our later episodes when we talk about the Disney shorts. But I think that's a great mesh of the two mediums of, again, live action and animation, and it's beautifully done. I think one of the most complex mixings of that style of filmmaking that I think I've ever seen. I mean, I preferred that over some modern computer-generated imagery because it's so raw, because you can see that each and every character is hand-drawn, and it mixes in really well with the live-action storyline that we're following throughout the entire movie.
And you can feel that effort, you know, put into making
exactly.
it feel real watching the film. Like, you can tell, like, they were working hard to make this believable,
yeah.
and because there's so many Easter eggs there. Again, we talked about this in our 80s episode, but again, just a very good film. Kind of agree, you know, you can't really include this on the list 100%, but
yeah.
again, they did have an involvement in it, and again, you know, getting the right to Disney characters. I mean, that's
yeah. It just has to be mentioned. Because
that's a hell of a thing to do.
It is. It's just such a fun show, or fun movie, rather, and yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to watch, as mentioned, one of my favorites. And then by the end of 1988, November 1988, we have what is my second favorite movie on the list, and actually the last movie on our list. See, this is a short episode. Not a lot to talk about in the Bronze Era, but we have Oliver and Company, of course, loosely based on Oliver Twist. One of my favorite Disney movies, to be honest, especially of this era, as mentioned. I can remember watching this movie a whole lot as a kid.
Oh, yeah, just I remember a good style to it, good character development, good all-around storytelling. You know, the last one before we get into the Renaissance, and, you know, it clearly shows that, you know what, they want to make a rebound, and, you know, that's arguably high quality
yeah.
from, you know, a company that realistically, you know, was kind of basic for the most part in
yeah.
this, you know, time frame we were talking about.
Yeah, you have a lot of very interesting changes going on at this time in the Walt Disney Company. You have a lot of executive changes happening throughout this era, some of which are considered good, and some of which are considered bad. And then you moving into the Disney Renaissance. I think the Renaissance is going to be one of the most interesting episodes we do in this series because you have some very high quality content coming out as far as films are concerned. So, I mean, we have The Little Mermaid, we have Aladdin, we have The Lion King. You know, a lot of these movies that kids from our generation are going to say are Disney classics. Now, of course, we know on paper, Pinocchio, Snow White, Dumbo, those are the true Disney classics. Mm-hmm. But to a lot of our generation, 90s babies, you know, this Disney Renaissance, this is what got them into to Disney. This is what got them into the Walt Disney Company as a whole. So I think this is going to be very interesting. Intermingle that with a lot of the conflict that's going to be happening at this time. This is when we have Walt's nephew Roy starting the Save Disney campaign to try to combat Michael Eisner in executive office. So you have a lot of very strange things happening. You have more parks being developed. You have Disney Channel being further developed. You have Disney feature or Disney television animation being further developed. And this is when you start to see things really change in Disney feature animation. And a lot of animators tell a lot of stories about this being a very dark time in the Walt Disney Company. So I think this next episode is going to be very exciting. And it's hard for me to find a movie, honestly, in the Disney Renaissance that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to probably be a very long-winded episode, but I think that's okay.
I mean, it's basically what is going to happen. You know, 70s and 80s, you know, these what used to be just strictly film companies, you know, they're expanding to, you know, TV, other media, amusement parks, you know. Warner Brothers eventually will get their deal with Six Flags. Universal Studios is going to come about. You know, in that time frame, you see these simple studios, you know, they're becoming giants. You know, they're collecting a lot of other, you know, outlets. You know, they're joining other media franchises.
Yeah.
So, you know, but again, in the 90s is when, you know, you have a very big resurgence in, you know, just film in general.
Yeah.
Not like the 80s was a, you know, by far the 80s was not a financial struggle for Hollywood. But again, you know, you have technological advances, you have a lot of good storytellers starting to come up, and, you know, it's just a special generation that, you know, they realize, we got to get back on this, we got to reclaim our spot on the throne. That, you know, I wouldn't say they lost in, you know, the Bronze Age, But again, no one really was claiming it.
You're right. It's going to amount to a very interesting episode. I honestly think the next two episodes that we're going to do are going to be a lot of fun and be very interesting because we go straight from the Disney Renaissance to the post-Renaissance modern era, which has been a roller coaster ride of quality. You have good movies and then you have very bad movies. So I think these next two episodes are going to shape up to be a lot of fun, something you definitely don't want to miss. But as far as the Bronze Era is concerned, the Bronze Age, I think we've kind of touched on all of that. I think that's kind of a wrap. Do you have anything else to say?
That, again, you know, it's kind of just a blimp on the radar in the overall Disney, which is weird to say when you were talking about almost over 20 years.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what happened from a film standpoint. You know, they started putting their eggs in other baskets, and then, you know, at the end they were like, you know what? We got that settled. Let's go back to what we were famous
for. Let's go back to what we started on. You're right. So I think that wraps it up. I think it does. So, as always, we did mention it at the beginning, but be sure to check us out on all of our platforms, iTunes, Google Play, KRCU.org, and go to KRCU's Facebook page. Give it a like. You can follow what we're doing, a lot of our developments on our upcoming summer series shows, and you can follow all the other things that the station is doing at that time. So it's a lot of fun stuff. So, as mentioned, be sure to tune in to our next Disney episode when we will talk about the Disney Renaissance. So if there's some 90s babies out there and some 80s babies, this is going to be your era.
It's going to be Memory Road, basically.
It is. It's going to be Memory Road, so you're not going to want to miss it. We're going to be talking about 1989 to 1999. So, yeah, be sure to check that out. So, for Real Talk, I'm Colin Ritter.
And I'm Peter Lewis.
We'll see you at the movies.